All right. Can you guys hear me? Perfect. So we are on time. We're going to start the session because we have a lot to cover. Thanks, everyone, for coming. I know it's early. So for your being here on time and being early, we have a few giveaways in the end for questions. I'll get started. My name is Rohit Nagarmal. I am a program manager in Microsoft in the Exchange team. And with me today is Dragan.
Good morning. I'm Dragan Pankov. I'm from Bosnia, and I'm MVP for Office 365. As you've probably seen yesterday in the developer track kickoff, Microsoft has three main fields or three main investments in Office 365 development. So you can extend Office applications and Office servers by building your own apps that integrate contextually inside them. Second, you can use Office 365 REST APIs, which are also GA'd yesterday, to surface Office 365 data from your own applications. So those applications can be Windows, then can be Windows Phone, or non-.NET applications like Android and iOS. And third, you can use flexible tooling for the development of your applications. You can use, of course, Visual Studio, but you are not forced to do so. You can use Eclipse or iOS tools to build applications for your own platform.
So what we'll do today is we're going to focus on three key areas. We'll have apps for Office, apps for SharePoint, which Dragan will cover. And then later, I'll come back on to explain the REST APIs. So the REST APIs, as he was just saying, were announced GA just yesterday. So there's a lot to talk about, and I hope you guys have fun. Take it away.
Yeah. So we'll first cover apps for Office. And a small disclaimer, this is a 200-level session. So the first part will be familiar to those who already have experience with building Office and SharePoint apps. And the second part, which Rohit will cover in half an hour or so, will cover new REST APIs, which GA'd yesterday. So for apps for Office, development story is really widened with the introduction of Office 2013. For extending Office, you can, of course, use all the tools that you could use for extending previous versions of Office. But a recommended way of extending Office 2013 is to build apps. Apps are based on standard web technology, such as HTML and JavaScript. And because of that, they can be surfaced in both Office desktop and web clients. There are three main types of apps for Office. You have task pane apps, contextual mail apps, and content apps. Also, this architecture means that apps for Office are multiple device friendly. So they can be surfaced in big screen, small screen, et cetera. There are three main scenarios for building apps for Office. And each one builds on previous one. First approach is to build an app. And apps are one of three already mentioned types of apps, which are running inside of Office application or are embedded inside of Office document. Then you can build document templates for Office applications that integrate one or more apps for Office, or that require that one or more apps for Office are installed inside Office application. And the third option is to build an app for SharePoint that can contain one or more document templates, which in turn can contain one or more apps for Office. And on this slide, you can see some of the scenarios some of the examples for each of these scenarios. What is inside an app? So one app for Office can have two main parts. First part is an app manifest, and second part is a website. Manifest is an XML file which contains basic settings for an application. So it points to the start page of a web page. It also contains basic settings like author, permissions, et cetera, et cetera. And app manifest has to be deployed either on the Office store or inside an app catalog on SharePoint or on trusted network location. On the other side, a web page is simple, HTML and JavaScript page, which can be deployed to any web server. But what is important to mention, App Manifest has to point to the start page of a web page. So I will show that in a demo. And when building apps for Office, you will use JavaScript API for Office, which is currently in version 1.1. And on that URL down on the left, you can find a lot of comprehensive documentation about JavaScript API for Office. So let me now build a small app for Office just to show you how to use the tooling. I will go now to my Visual Studio. And let me switch the display. And I will simply create a new project. I will use App for Office template, which is already installed inside of Visual Studio. And I will say, TechCAD app. And I will deploy it to the folder TechCAD Europe 2014. When I click OK, I'm presented with the wizard where I need to select which kind of app I want to build. So I can select task pane, content, or mail app. I will select task pane app. And on final screen, I need to select on which application, Office application, I want this app to be embedded. So I can select Word, Excel, PowerPoint, or Project. For simplicity, I will just select Word. So I will left Word selected. And when I click Finish, my solution will be created. And in this solution, you will see that we have two projects. One project will be an App for Office project, which contains App Manifest, this here on top. And let me open it. And you see that in Visual Studio, there is a manifest designer which gives us a nice user experience when we want to customize the app. So I will say display name for the app, TechCAD app. I will say provider name is Dragon. And down here, you see that source location is the address of my start page for an app. I also can configure permissions down there. That would be the manifest. I will save it. And the other project is the app website itself. So it contains... Oops. So it contains... user experience in home HTML, and it contains my custom logic in home.js. So I will now start the app and show what it does. When I start the app itself will launch Word, and it will display my app in on the task pane, so on the margin of current document. And let's say type something. And let's select the text. And when I click this button, Get Data from Selection, then the data from the document will be copied to the app. We can afterwards do whatever we want. But this is inside the existing template for the app. And I will leave the app running. Let's go now to the JavaScript. You can see that there is a jQuery code bound to my button, Get Data from Selection, which let's do it this way. Get Data from Selection, which uses Office JavaScript API, call of JavaScript function Get Selected Data Async. To copy data from selection to my app. So here, as an argument, I have a coercion type. Coercion type basically describes the type of data which the function uses. And I also have this notification notification area, which is here out of the box. So when I create the app, it will be already here. And I'm simply copying that to notification area. I will now extend the app so that I can copy data from the so that I can insert data to selection. So let's go to Visual Studio and go to my home HTML. I will simply add another button, which will be used for that. And let me open this JavaScript file again on the JS. And function will be set selection data, which is using another call in Office JavaScript APIs, set selected data async, which will insert this data, which will insert this HTML text to my document. And coercion type is not text in this case; it's HTML. It can be HTML or matrix or table or text or document XML. So let's save it. And what's left to do is to do the binding of this function call with my button. And I will now save this. App is still running, so notice that app is still running. And go back to my Word and do the reload. And when I reload, my user experience of the app will be updated with this new button. So let's try it. Click set selected data, and you see the text is inserted, or HTML is inserted inside the document. So that was the first demo where we managed to read data from document and put data back to document. When we're talking about app shapes, there are three basic shapes for the apps for Office. We have task pane apps, which are running in the left or right margin of an application. And this app shape is good for reference or lookup solutions, like dictionaries or Wikipedia searches or Bing searches. So here are some examples. First example is a task pane app that enables us to insert diagram from external system or from file system to an application. And second example is Bing News Search, where I can search for some term and then select the text and insert it to my document. And third option is a dictionary. And you can see that in this case, we are using Excel, not Word. Another app shape is a content app. And content apps are can be surfaced in Excel or in PowerPoint. Basically, that enables us to insert app content directly inside document. So that can be some kind of diagram, that can be a map, or something like that. Here's the example of a Bing Maps app, which inserts the map to the document. And based on the data inside the worksheet, it draws nice pie charts. Second example is also content app. And third option is a bubble chart, also based on document on the data inside document. Third app shape is a mail app or contextual mail app. And this app shape can be only used inside Outlook or Outlook web app. It starts contextually, and it enables us to surface contextual data inside of to insert context, to do some actions based on the content of a mail. Here is a package tracker. I think you're probably familiar with that. So it's an example that scans the document for a FedEx package ID, and based on that FedEx package ID, it shows us the package tracking. I will now show another demo of an app for Office. So right here, I have my Excel workbook. This app is called Event Board, and it's made by Falafel. It basically enables you to create your conference and to build it and to publish it to Falafel event board service. So this is the Excel workbook with some information about conference. And I can insert the app, going to insert, and from my apps, when I select my organization, I can insert this event board conference data or event board reports. So these Office apps are deployed to my SharePoint app catalog on my SharePoint Online. And my Office has trust between Office client and my Office app catalog on the web. So when I go to event board, I can insert it. And this app enables me to insert valid data to my Excel workbook. So if I want to add a new track, and let's say I want to validate the track, you see that I receive an error that this data is not valid track data because I didn't insert description and color. So let's do the insertion. And for the color, I can select any of hex codes, or I can insert random code. So basically, in this way, I can create my complete conference data and conference content, save it, and upload it back to a Falafel event board system, and then my conference will be created, which I can use later on. There is another app, also made by Falafel, which enables me to do the reporting based on my conference data. So I will use Word for that. And when I log in, I will be able to insert reporting to my document. Let's do the session statistics. And here's the report. Right now, you can insert the table and see a report in tabular form. This also works in Excel and in Word. Let's go to another topic, another section are apps for SharePoint. So if you have developed for SharePoint, you are familiar with SharePoint building blocks, like lists, libraries, web parts, content types, etc., etc. And all these building blocks you can use in your apps. There are two main architecture of apps for SharePoint. One architecture is SharePoint hosted app. SharePoint hosted apps live completely inside SharePoint. So they don't use any external servers, any external logic. And you can develop custom logic for these apps only using JavaScript. What is good with this approach, you don't have to think about tokens or OAuth, et cetera, because everything is hosted inside of SharePoint. They also have some downsides, like they're not suitable for large enterprise functionalities. But for example, if you want to create small apps on your SharePoint, you can use SharePoint hosted apps. Also, there is another option, which is provider hosted, where complete implementation of an app works externally to SharePoint. So they can deploy app web to SharePoint, but all your databases or all your user experience, et cetera, is outside of SharePoint. And they are much more powerful, but also to develop these apps, you need to know how to do authentication, authorization of a user. They can be deployed on Azure. They can be deployed, for example, on Apache and developed using PHP. And, of course, they can be developed and deployed to IIS. So in cases of Azure in IIS, you can use .NET or JavaScript. In case of Apache, you should use REST to communicate with the app. Which brings us to our next topic, SharePoint client APIs. So to access SharePoint data from an app, you are using underscore API endpoint, which can be accessed either using REST, using standard REST calls based on OData standard, and you can also use JavaScript, you can use client-side object model proxy, which is built by Microsoft, and this proxy has implementations for .NET, for JavaScript, and for Silverlight. So if you're building ASP.NET MVC application, you should probably use .NET CLR library. And if you're building PHP client, PHP application, you can use REST to make the calls to SharePoint. When the app is developed, you need to deploy it. You can package the app using Visual Studio, and then you can deploy this .app file either to Office Store or to your app catalog on your SharePoint infrastructure. I will now show how to create a first app for SharePoint using Visual Studio. So let me stop this previous project and create a new project, which will be app for SharePoint. Oh, sorry. Let me cancel this. Okay. So I will close this solution. And then I will create a new project, which will be app for SharePoint. Take a SharePoint app. And similarly, like in previous case, I have a new app wizard, which asks me where do I want to debug the app. So in this case, I will use my dev site on my Office 365. And I will select SharePoint hosted app for simplicity. And when I click finish, I first need to log into my SharePoint Online to be able to debug the app. And click sign in. When I click sign in, my app will try to communicate with SharePoint, and after a while, it will be built. Let's see what are the components of this app. We have one project. That project contains app manifest. Like in previous case, we have a manifest designer, We can configure version, start page, hosting type, permissions. I will not change anything here. And we also have start page of an application. Manifest is pointing to this default ASPX, which is a kind of ASP.NET page, but without any code file behind. So it is used simply as a user interface, user experience, for user experience. Because this is a SharePoint hosted app, entire logic is made in JavaScript in this file app.js. And this app is loading current user and displaying greeting on the start page. Let me start it to show you that. When I click start, app will be deployed to my SharePoint dev site, and it will be started. And eventually, it should show a greeting message. This can take 30 to 45 seconds, depending on your internet connection, because it is packaged and deployed to SharePoint Online. So the app is now deployed. I again need to log in. And when I click sign in, I should be redirected to the app, and the app should show me hello, hello dragon, which is the case. Now I will extend the app with small functionality to read data from lists in current web. For that, I will first add a new div to my default ASPX page. Let's say below this paragraph. Div has the ID lists info. And then we need to do the magic inside my app.js. Let's set up some variables first. Then we will add some functions. So what is happening here? We are loading. We have a list collection which is defined inside, which is defined in my app.js. And basically, with this call get underscore lists, we are loading all lists from the app web. And with this function, we are executing load. So we are loading lists and executing the query asynchronously. If the query succeeds, we will show all the lists data in my page. If the query fails, we will just display a small message. And what's left to do here is to make a call to the function from the document.ready. Let's start it. Again, the app will be started. I will be asked to sign in, and when I sign in, the app will show me the greeting message and two lists which are inside the app web. So this is only an introduction to developer story. For example, if you want to build an app that read data from the host web from SharePoint and write data back to SharePoint, you need to use something called cross-domain executor. Request executor library, cross-domain executor. And you can find a lot of the demos on that dev.office.com. Let's go back to PowerPoint. Similarly, to apps for Office, we also have free app shapes in apps for SharePoint. First shape is full page app. In this case, basically entire web page will be used by an app to be shown to user. It's a full page experience, and it's required for all apps. Some examples are Adlib PDF Publisher, which loads in a full page and data from Documents Library inside of SharePoint, and then then can publish those data as PDF. Second example is EvPoint Meetings. EvPoint Meetings app is also a full page immersive experience. So when you launch it from SharePoint, it will be started as a new full page app. Second app shape is app part. App parts are something similar to web parts. For users, they look exactly the same. They're displayed inside of SharePoint. But the difference between app parts and web parts is that this content in the app part is completely loaded and shown from an app. You can insert app part similarly to the web part. You have a command in the ribbon. And third option are UI command extensions. This option enables you to create ribbon buttons or UI custom actions for lists or libraries. And in that case, also integrate the app inside SharePoint experience. And I will finish my first part with DocuSign demo. So in this case, I have my SharePoint Online site with some documents inside Document Library. And you can see that in the ribbon, I also have my DocuSign commands, which are currently disabled because none of the document is selected. So if I select any of these documents, then I can use DocuSign to sign or to check sign-in status. And also, I have UI commands in my contextual menu down here. So I can go to DocuSign, get signatures, check status, or even sign it. I will now sign this document, which then will be loaded and displayed inside DocuSign application. So I will first log in to my DocuSign app. Login was successful, and I will go back to SharePoint. And you can see here that my document is loaded inside DocuSign, which looks like it is SharePoint, but from the URL. It's a bit small, but we are not currently on SharePoint. We are currently on DocuSign server. And let me sign it. Let's say here on the top and click Finish. I'm finished with signing the document. And when I finish signing the document, my document will be signed, and its signed copy will be deployed to my. It will be copied to my DocuSign documents folder, and I will also be notified via email that my document signing is completed. So if I go to DocuSign documents here, one moment. You can see that there is a signed document, which is changed a few seconds ago by me. So DocuSign is an example of full page app, which also has UI common extensions implemented in SharePoint. So we have ribbon and we have contextual commands available for my documents. So this would conclude my first part. Now Rohit will talk about Office 365 APIs.
All right, thanks, Dragon. So hope I still have you guys with me. Yesterday, we announced the Office 365 API GA. And one thing which I wanted to focus on was, initially, why are these REST APIs important? So as Dragon said, one of the ways for you to create apps is within Office. You know, you can create your apps within SharePoint, within Word, Excel, and everything. But there are a lot of apps which live outside. For example, mobile apps, web apps, ISVs have built these apps for organizations. So what do you do with those? You know, you still want to leverage the power of Office 365, all the data. But then how do you do it? Well, REST API is the answer. We've had traditionally a lot of different legacy APIs, SOAP APIs, but these are the new generation of those. So to make a business case, you know, Office 365 today has around hundreds of millions of users and hundreds of petabytes of data. This data and the number of users is growing exponentially. Just let's take Exchange, for example. Exchange today, these APIs are offered on Exchange Online, but with the convergence of Outlook, which is previously known as Hotmail.com, and Exchange, all those consumer accounts are also going to be on the same platform. In the future, we're also going to have the same APIs available on hybrid and on-prem customers. So if you write your apps using these APIs, you are sure that your returns will be compounded as time goes by, more and more platforms get added to this. So one is quantity, and the next is quality, right? So not only are these users big in number, they are also very engaged. They spend a lot of time curating this data, living in this data, manipulating it. So when you write apps for these engaged users on this rich data, you're sure to provide business value and productivity through your apps. Again, you know, one of Microsoft's goal with the new CEO has been that we are a cloud-first and mobile-first company. And this is a step in the right direction because these APIs are built for today's modern platforms using the latest SDKs for not only .NET, but also for iOS and Android out of the gate. We are going to be expanding the developer support to build this in, you know, all different languages like Rails and Ruby and Python and whatnot. And even if those are not available today, because they are all HTTP-based, you can start using them right away. One of the key differentiators of the API is also that they offer granular control. So, you know, it's not the old system where you give the keys to the whole kingdom, right? Your app can decide that it has to give access only for a specific thing. For example, your app can say, hey, I want permission only for contacts read. I want permission for only mail read. Because imagine, you know, if a person was to ask for permission to say mail send, they might be very wary, or the admin of that company might be very wary, because they might be like, I don't want an app to be sending email on my user's behalf. So in that sense, your app can say that, oh, I just need mail write permission, in which case it will create the mail and store it away in a drafts folder. You can review it later and send it. And again, as I said, you know, these are based on open standards. Like, for example, previously, the EWS API, the Exchange Web Service API, uses SOAP. And one of the challenges is that there is no native support for SOAP in platforms like Android or iOS, which means that developers have to, you know, concoct some type of their own REST proxy or use some off-the-shelf products, which are really not very good. So this way, using the latest protocols like OAuth and JSON, the ramp-up is faster because people already know how to consume them. There are a variety of tools available which you can use. And OData, which we have used to restify our services, offers a lot of cool ways to do filtering, sorting, paging, all that. So what is the collection today? So from Active Directory, you can look at a tenant's users and the groups. From Exchange and coming soon Outlook.com, you'll be able to look at mail calendar contacts. SharePoint, as Dragon said, you have the client APIs. sites. And OneDrive, we have OneDrive for Business, and coming soon, OneDrive for Consumer. So one other big advantage is that, as you saw, there are different workloads, right? There is Azure Active Directory, there is Exchange, there is SharePoint, there's OneDrive. But using these APIs, you don't have to worry about the different programming model. They all follow the same authentication flow. So, you know, once you write your code to say that, hey, I want to get a token for these APIs, it's the same code for all these. You can write your apps to be a device app or a web app, which means that you can write a Windows Store app or a website which uses the same authentication. And your app can be of two types. It can be an admin consent or a user consent, which means that you can say that my app will require, for example, Coca-Cola's admin to give permissions to this app. And when it does that, all the users in Coca-Cola will not be asked for consent. Or you can make your app a user consent app, in which case anybody who logs in will have to consent and say, okay, I allow this app to do these things on my behalf. Here's an example of how the consent screen looks. I'll show you an example later, too. And of course, it's a secure protocol. It uses OAuth 2.0, which is pretty omnipresent today in the web. For example, Facebook APIs uses OAuth 2.0 to allow developers access to Facebook data. And the advantages are that you don't have to capture credentials. You, as an app developer, don't want to bother with safely keeping the credentials of a user, making sure that the credentials are still valid and all that. So this takes away all that pain from you. And as I said, fine-grained access allow adoption for your app, because folks who are wary, companies which are wary to give too much access, you can tell them, no, I only am going to read some data, I'm not going to write anything, and create your app in such a way that appeals to the target audience. So apart from the features of like mail, calendar, and files, we also offer a discovery service. And this discovery service is useful to find the endpoints for these APIs. Now, some of these endpoints, like for example, for mail, calendar, contacts, are static. It's always going to be outlook.office.com, or for Azure, it's going to be graph.windows.net. But for the SharePoint ones, they are dynamic because they contain the tenant name. So instead of you trying to figure that out, you can use the discovery service to find that information. And in the future, in case even the static URLs change, your app doesn't need to change. Now, one of the other advantages of using the REST APIs is that it offers rich metadata. So for example, if you look at other REST services today in the market, and nearly all big ones have, you can't really figure out what are the different things that this service offers. Whereas with the metadata that you can get from any endpoint, you'll be able to see what are the different entities, collections, actions available for this API. I'll show you later, too, how it looks. And actually, to go back, the advantage of having that metadata is not only that you can learn and discover these APIs, but you can actually point tools. For example, you can point serializers, deserializers to create the objects. In fact, all the SDKs that we have developed use this metadata to generate the client libraries. So today, when we have our .NET, Android, and iOS SDKs, they all use that metadata document, which is publicly available, to generate the classes. And tomorrow, when we expand this to a larger set, we are going to keep doing the same so we can scale better. So again, of course, .NET SDK has all these different types of apps you can build. But iOS SDK has been GA'd in TechEd now, and Android SDK also has gone through a refresh, because we had gone to preview with these APIs a few months ago, and this is a GA bit, so a lot of new additions and changes. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to spend a few minutes explaining the key features of each of these APIs so you have a good understanding of what is available in each of them. So for mail, three basic permissions: read, write, and send. It's a little different because traditionally, you'll only see read and read write. What we did is we heard a lot of feedback from customers where they were not very keen on having write permission include send, and that's why we separated them out. And the main entities are, you have a folder. Folder can contain messages. Messages can contain attachments. Various actions you can perform on messages, like copy, move, reply, forward, And these are some samples of how you will use these APIs. So if you go to outlookoffice365.com/me, me is the authenticated user. You can either have me, or you can change it to users/the SMTP address. And so if you want to look at the inbox folder, you can just say /inbox. If you want to look at the messages inside that folder, you say /messages. It's pretty intuitive and self-explanatory. You don't have to really read any documentation for it. And we also introduced a new API called SendMail, which is super easy to create and send a new mail. Because these are scenarios that people want to do very quickly. You know, I mean, for example, when I was trying to use EWS to basically just read an email and create an email, it took me a long time to go through the documentation and be able to cover that. But in today's world, where an app developer wants to, you know, have his app done in a weekend, we cannot expect them to spend so much time in doing these basic scenarios. So for that purpose, it really makes it easy for somebody to go and do these basic operations in no time. Yeah? Yeah, so it doesn't matter, because these are REST APIs, it doesn't matter where you write from. Once you have the authentication set up, you know, you can basically use HTTP web request if you are in .NET to call these APIs. I'll show you how you can do it from the browser, which is the best way to show, because then, you know, it's no tooling, nothing, right? It's just browser, plain HTTP calls. So calendar is one of the most important APIs. It's also one of the more complex APIs, because it has things like recurrence, master series, which you don't want to really put your brain behind and try and understand too deeply, because, hey, I just want to look at person's events for this week. So that's why, by having this API, we take all that complexity away from you and keep it at the service layer. Basic permissions, again, read, write. In calendar, we have calendar group. It's nothing but a grouping of different calendars. You know, it could be something like, hey, my personal calendars of my family members, or it could be your project calendars for different projects you're working on. So calendar groups can have calendars within them. Calendars can have events within them. This is probably the most important entity in calendars. These are events as appointment. And then calendar view, I'll come to that a little bit. And then attachments can be within events. So events have, of course, actions like accept, decline. Now, again, some more samples on how you can use calendar. You can go from me to calendar. This is your default calendar, because, you know, most of us use just one calendar. So you can go to your default calendar by just saying me/calendar. Or you can go me/calendar groups, in which it will list you all your groups, and then you can navigate as a tree structure from calendar group to calendar to your events. So again, you can look at your events, and calendar view is basically a collection to show you, for a given time window, all the events. So you can say, give me for this start and end time all the events, and that's what calendar view is for. Contacts, pretty simple. Contact folder, they contain contacts. These are some samples of how you would use it. Just a point to note here that these contacts are not your company's users within a tenant. These are the contacts that you've created in your mailbox. So if you want to get to your users, like, hey, Bob at Contoso and Rob at Contoso, then you have to use the users API from Azure Active Directory. This is like, hey, I have a sales lead. I'm talking to Joe@Starbucks.com for a potential opportunity, and you've created his contact. That's what you use this for. Next is Files API. Read, write. You have drive, files, and folder. And again, you can get to your drive or get to your files. Very simple. And uses and groups, contains users and groups. Navigate to them through a different URL for Azure. Now, one thing I want to just say is that, you know, we have noticed that, you know, we have this different URL endpoint. So one of the changes that has become forthcoming is an overall api.microsoft.com graph, which is going to unify all these URLs under one, and it will be one common URL for all of Microsoft. So that is in the works. We are previewing that, and more features will move to that. So if you start to use this, you know, you can easily migrate to start using api.microsoft.com tomorrow because it'll use the same authentication model and everything. Will they be still available? Yeah. I mean, we are not going to, we are going to provide backward compatibility because now they are JBits. And ultimately, those call the same APIs. So, all right, so let me show a couple of, you know what, my computer has. Shut down, so give me a second. Okay, perfect. So this is a Chrome extension, which is very useful to show the different REST APIs. So I have here, the first call is to the metadata. Remember I was telling you that if you want to learn more about your service and what are the different things it offers, you just call this. And here, if you see, it shows you what the different enums are, what are the different complex types, what are the different entities. Here you see sendmail and message object. And you figure out, okay, what are the properties? It has subject, body. These are the different data types that they are made of. And then the next thing you can do is you can either go to metadata or you can start going to me and start discovering from here. So me, as I said earlier, is an authenticated user. So here my user who is currently logged in is Alex D. And I want to show you one more thing here. There is this header that you can send with all your requests. By default, you would want to keep it as none because you don't want too much of a heavy payload coming back. But if you want to learn more about the API, you can provide this value to be full. And when you do that, you get a lot more metadata back. So the same call we saw earlier, but this time, if you see, you're getting a lot more information. For example, hey, I can go from user to his folders, his messages. So, you know, when you're trying to learn, it's easy to give this tag and get as much data as you can about the service. And then again, an example of inbox. So I'm just looking at what are the different folders. So let me just show you quickly here. So this is Alex's mail. So I just create another folder here. And if I go back, and if I execute the same request, here I get two. So this is live service. It's reading it from the Exchange APIs and giving you the results. Now, if I want to look at messages, it shows you all the messages for this user. And as you saw in one of the samples, right, there are different constructs for OData. So this one, top, is used to restrict the number of items you get back. So you can say when you say top equals one, you'll notice that you only got one item back with a next link to the next item. Now, you saw a few examples here of reading, right? Now, of course, the REST APIs can be used completely using HTTP to execute all the functionality that you offer. So you don't have to use any tools. You don't have to use Visual Studio or the SDKs. So here an example of creating that email. So remember I was telling you that we have the SendMail API. So if you notice, I'm doing HTTP post. Here I'm using authorization as basic. But of course, when you write your app, you'll use a token. I have a message object. And these are the few properties I'm setting. For example, here I can say and that, you know, I mean, what did I find in Barcelona? That's what I saw. You know, when I say send, there, I get a 202 accepted, which means the message should be here. And there, you have it. The message has been sent. It should also be in your sent items. So there is an option in the SendMail API to not save it in the sent items if you wanted to. Now, similarly, you can also look at events. So what are the default events in my mailbox? And you can define that, hey, I just want a few properties. You know, if you look back here, you notice that there are a bunch of properties, right? But most likely, you're not interested in all the properties. You're writing an app, and you're only interested in, say, the subject or you're only interested in the subject, start, and end. So then you can just use select. And when you do that, notice that you're only getting those three properties back. The other thing you can do is to use filter, which is another useful construct. Filter is for filtering the results using a condition. So you can use a property like start and say, I want all my items to follow this criteria where the start is greater than a particular date. So you can write powerful queries using the syntax available. So here now, you're getting only messages which are satisfying that criteria. And finally, there is a skip parameter also. Skip basically allows you to do paging. So you can say, I want the next 10 items in my list. So if you see here, oh, I got only two left. So this kind of shows you the power of using the REST APIs and how you can construct various queries to satisfy your scenarios. You know, I've just noted a few examples of some scenarios that most people use, like, hey, I want the top messages, I want select some properties, I want a few conditions to be met, I want a contact with a given name. And we are constantly actually evolving these to offer more and more. All right, so hopefully by now you have a decent idea of what the REST APIs offer. So let's say that you went back and you were like, okay, I want to try it out. I want to maybe learn a little bit more about it. So the one-stop shop is basically dev.office.com. And let me, so yeah, so I would say land here and there is like 30, 40 hours of training material. There are like many, many code samples for various apps that you want to write, and you can get started, and that's what we'll do. But before that, I also wanted to highlight a couple of things that are new. If you go to the documentation, you will see that we have introduced an API sandbox. So without having to go and get an IDE, an MSDN subscription, or getting an Office 5 tenant, if you want to just play with these APIs, you can go to the code samples, and you'll see here there are JavaScript samples, and of course, we'll be adding more and more here, and you can actually execute it. And it goes against a test tenant that we've set up. And it shows you the response exactly like you would if you wrote it yourself. I can file a bug when I go back. Now, this is because, you know, these test tenants are not warmed up. And the first call generally takes time, but then it's traditionally faster. But you get the idea. That, you know, there are different types of actions you can perform here. Come on. I'll come back to that. The other thing is the documentation. So, you know, it's quite a different refresh. Like, you've been used to seeing MSDN documentation be in a particular way, but this is a new attempt in making it more action-based, much more concise, and to the point. So here, for example, when you look at the documentation, it talks about, you know, how do you get messages, how do you send messages. And when you go inside, again, we have the experience for you to try it as you read it. So when you look at, okay, I see that to get messages I have to do this, you can actually go down and execute this right here, and you get the response back. Same as you saw in the API sandbox. Huh. Well, anyway. So yeah, so you know, you can check out the documentation, try the sandbox, and then you can go to the code samples, where here you'll see there are a variety of samples for different app types. So let's say you were interested in you know, the creating a Windows Store app. You go here, and it takes you to a GitHub page, which contains all the information that you need to download it and try it out. So it'll tell you what are the prereqs here. You need Visual Studio, you need the API tools, and you need a developer subscription. So I have downloaded that, of course, beforehand. So here, when you download that particular solution, this is what you see. And there are two parts here, right? So first is that once you write your own app, you'll need to do two things. You as a developer will need to first register the app with Azure Active Directory. And the reason is so that Azure Active Directory knows that your app requires these permissions, and whether, earlier as I said, it's an admin app or is it a user consent app. So that when somebody requests access from this app, it knows what token to give and what to put in the token. So how you do that is the registration process is pretty simple. You know, as you saw earlier also, it follows the same principles of providing you tooling to do that easily. So you say add connected service. And here I've logged in as the admin, but if you're not, it'll prompt you. And it shows you all the different permissions that are available for your app to choose from. So for example, here you can say, oh, I need calendar access, I need contacts access, I need files access. And when you say apply and say OK, that's it, you're done. The app basically gets registered, the client ID and the password are automatically entered in your app configuration. So if it's a Windows Store app, it'll be in the app XML. If it's a ASP.NET app, it'll be the web.config. But you don't have to worry about all that because it's all taken care of. So now when you run your app, this client ID and secret is what is sent to Azure, and it identifies the app and issues tokens against it. So that's the registration process. Now let's say that you are done and you have finished the registration and you have a prototype, you want to see how it works. So this sample, when you download, you basically just go and do FI, and it starts the sample project. You say connect, and this will work with any Office 365 tenant that you have because this is a user app. So I log in with my O365 user. I can't speak and type. I make mistakes. So when you connect here, you see the consent screen. It tells you, hey, this app, the startup project, is asking you to give permissions for it to read your profile, access your contacts and calendar. Are you OK with that? And you can see some more information about who this app is. Like, hey, this is a Contoso app. And all the permissions that you saw will have some text here, which is easy for some end users to use. So once you say OK, it goes to Azure. The Azure says, OK, I've gotten the consent. It records it. So next time when you log in, it won't ask for the consent again. And it issues the token. The app now gets the token. It can start making calls. So what we did here is the first thing we did is we went to Azure and figured out what your name is, what your job title is, and displayed it here. Next, if you were interested, you would say, OK, I want to look at the calendar. So here is an example of, I think I pressed disconnect by mistake. I have set it up so that it asks for consent every time, but when you do it, it won't. So now it's going and trying fetching the calendar again. This is a test account, so it might be a little slower. But the calendar events will be from here. Let's look at Alex's calendar. So here is his calendar for this week. And there, you've gotten the list of all the events. And now let's say if you wanted to pick one and say, at conference center or something, you say update. It says updating your event. Event was updated. If I go back here, which one was it? I don't remember. Let's take another one, which we know. So here, coffee at Pira. So this one. Let's go. Coffee at test location. Say update. It was updated. And there you see it has updated the event. Similarly, you can create an event. Meet Joe at say Rambla, and you say update. And if I go back there, this event got created. It's right now here. So it's pretty easy to see that the REST APIs can be used to do all the major operations that you want against these features. You can delete them. Come on. There. So our location was here. Delete the event. It's gone. So this meeting got canceled. It's gone from here. Another thing I want to quickly show is that if you go to the code itself, you'll notice, is it visible? It's not too visible. Yeah. You'll notice here that stop debugging here. This is basically using the SDK. So it offers you things like IntelliSense. So you can go and look at all the different options that are available. So if you see me dot, you'll see all the calendar, contacts, and everything that you can get. So when you decide to code, it's pretty easy. All right, I think that was the last part of the demo. Of course, as I mentioned, if you want to keep learning more, there is a lot of material available on the training site. There's a lot of samples available on the code samples. We have 60-plus Visual Studio projects. And there's also a site called Roadmap, in which you can see the things that are already in progress and things that we have decided to take on in development. If you go to user voice, you can actually tell us what features you're interested in. We take that very seriously. Every month we have a review, and things are added from this to our backlog. Stack Overflow, the tag is Office 365 APIs. The whole product engineering team is very focused on answering questions there. So if you have any questions, posted there, and you should hear back from us very quickly.
Can you go back to slides? Can you go back to slides? So I wanted to emphasize this once more. If you have your own full trust solutions, which you need to convert to the app model, you can go to the GitHub, where basically you can find a lot of examples of full trust solutions converted to the app model. And what's also important, there is a team of people from Microsoft with some chosen MVPs, which are basically constantly updating the code samples on the GitHub, which are demonstrating common scenarios. There is also a session on this conference which also will be demonstrated how to convert and what to think about when you're converting your full trust code to the app model. Another thing to point out, sorry, take over.
That's fine.
Another thing to point out is the Yammer group, Office 365, 365, how it goes, IT Pro. Sorry. So, besides roadmap, there is a Office 365 technical network where you can find a lot of useful information, a lot of contacts inside Microsoft which are working on this, a lot of us MVPs which are also available for you to give you advice and to help you with your Office 365 cases. So, please.
Yeah, so definitely, you know, we're looking forward to the feedback because, you know, these are new GA APIs. We are very eager to also make improvements. You know, the service rolls out nearly every week. So we are very quick at making changes. For example, during preview, we heard back from a lot of customers like Zapier and IFTTT, if you saw that yesterday. And while they were developing, we heard some feedback. We made changes to them, and they were able to get them out within weeks to the service. In fact, one of the testaments is that Zapier, which developed an integration with Office 365 APIs, was able to do it in just a matter of a couple of days. They were able to integrate with Office 365 service, where if you get an email, do something. If you get a calendar, then do event, then do something. So, you know, both ways. So it was pretty cool. They have a blog entry for it. If you want, you can check that out. And that's it. Questions? Yeah.
So when could you realistically expect that?
So, of course, our initial focus is the cloud. So, I don't have an exact date on when these will come online. Now, the code for these APIs is common, which means that, you know, this is what we ship to on-prems also. But then, of course, we are not backporting these two earlier versions of Exchange. So that's the thing. That decision has not been made that if we do decide to do that, how back we can go. Because there is also some capabilities that older versions don't have, because of which we cannot backport. So I would say, you know, we are probably thinking of having a more public announcement about what shall be in the roadmap, as you saw in that slide, previous slide here. You keep an eye there to, for any announcement in the future, but I really don't have a date by which we will have that. But initially, our focus is to enhance the existing APIs to add things like tasks, you know, Link, Yammer, all that to the REST APIs, and make it more feature-rich. Any other questions? Yeah.
So the question is, how long does it take to convert full trust solution to the app model? It depends. So that's the answer. It depends on the complexity. Some things can be done in the app model. Some things still are not ready. Some things are not still, there are still no examples for those. So keep an eye on the GitHub, and as soon as Steam publishes something, it will be there. And keep an eye on Vesa Juvonen. He has a blog, and I think he owns the GitHub repository. So he is the guy on which blog you will find the announcements about the GitHub samples for app conversion. So any other questions?
Perfect. So yeah, so you know, we are at the office booth. You can come down there if you want to learn more about certain demos or if you want to learn more about next steps. You know, we'll be more than happy to help you. And we will be here for a few more minutes. If you want to come by, have questions.
So the session will be recorded and it will be posted on Channel 9. Presentation will be also posted in a session resources on Channel 9. And I think I will also post a link on my Twitter account to session. And if it will be allowed, I will try to copy the presentation also on my blog. So keep an eye on Channel 9 and try to find me on Twitter, and you're good to go. Thank you.
Thank you.